right, we're going to reconvene the Story County Commissioners meeting, and we're going to move on now to item number 20, discussion of possible action. This is approval of business license second reading. Do you have those, Mr. Witten?
Yes, I do. Mr. Chairman, on behalf of Community Development, they are recommending approval of items A through J. All items as listed on your agenda. Those are specifically Atlas Consulting, Fulcrum, Motan, Reno Carson Messenger Service, TSS Technologies, VWR International, Zephyr Communications of Nevada, Sissy Barbecue and more, Rebecca's Wild Kitchen, and Reno Tahoe Catering Company, all to be approved.
Only 10.
It's we had a lot of first readings this week.
Yeah.
Any public comment regarding the business license second readings? Hearing none, if I get a motion for approval.
I make a motion to approve items A through J.
Second your motion.
Moved and second to approve all items A through J. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like the board to get a hold of me individually, I guess, and so you can put this on the agenda. I worked with counsel the last couple of meetings as he listens, and, he's taking the simple road with me. There is no legal need for me to name these businesses by specific names. So should you wish, we are now in a practice, not a policy, in a practice of only listing second readings that are good to go, that make it to the agenda unless they're good to go.
Okay, good.
So I'll tell you what, why don't I just work with, at the pleasure of the chairman, whoever that may be in any given year, and I will, I will not name names if that's the desire or will if you wish me to continue.
Okay. All right.
Then I'll forget.
All right, let's finish it up now with item 21, public comment. Ms. Bard, come on down.
Time to play the new prices, right?
I know. Number three, Nicole Bard, Story County resident. I actually have two questions. The first one is I attended a public forum that Lance conducted in Lockwood last Wednesday, very well attended by our Lockwood residents. And one of the things that you said, Lance, was that the pipeline bond didn't pass muster, didn't make it as written or presented. And I don't recall exactly the reasons why it didn't, but I'd like to know more about why it didn't pass, because the presentation that we got at the time was very confident and very, here's how it would be structured, et cetera. And so if that bond in its structure doesn't pass muster, what's going to replace that? So what's that status, Pat?
Mr. Goodman, Commissioner Goodman, please, with your permission. Great question. Super question. And we have to go back to the board for pretty much the reasons that Lance has mentioned, or the overall issue that Lance has mentioned. And I'm going to tell you what I've heard. And my source is very reliable. It happens not so much to be our counsel, but with our counsel present, it comes from Robert Sater, who's TRI's counsel. And it's also coming from our own bond advisor, Marty Johnson, JNA Consulting. I would tell you that the last I heard, which was probably about 45 days ago, that the approach using a tax increment area is on life support. Those were words I wrote down at the time. The issue is the structure, the rush, if you will, to get the Faraday Futures bill through the special session of the legislature. The statutory creating process is difficult in the first place. You throw a law out there, and 2 years later, you come back and you look at it and say, where do we screw up? And you're constantly changing it, how we're doing it with our policies and our ordinances in many respects. They only had however many days they had with Faraday, two or three, and they created a lot of vagaries in that bill, including the nature of a tax increment area, and the ways to fund particular parts of this project. In specific, the portion the county was willing to consider looking at in our request for an economic development financing proposal in the tune of about $35 million. So it hit a couple of big bombs, for lack of a better phrase, that will either totally derail it and cause them to seek another approach, which they are doing, or maybe a combination thereof. And it deals with, from the county perspective, something I totally appreciate and approve of, it deals with an ultra-conservative set of governing restrictions on bonding capacities and bonding debt service coverage. Going to be just looking at Hugh for a couple of nods because it's been a little bit rusty on this, but I believe we had to cover debt 3 or 4 times debt service coverage with enough revenue projected mm-hmm. off of there. Mm-hmm. So let's say 3. I can't recall if it was 3 or 4. And then on top of that, there's another governing restriction that I can't quite clearly state, and oddly enough, I think I got a call from the consultant that's putting this together and presented here, Jeremy Aguero, while we were in this meeting. But there's another governing restrictor, and when I say governing, I don't mean governance. I mean in the terms of like a governor on a truck or an engine or something that just isn't going to let it go any more than this. And it's a 15% rule that says your increment area you better not rely on your increment area for any more than 15% of what's needed. And even as big as all of TRIO's and all of the projected growth, it's not enough. It's not enough to cover debt service and meet that criteria. It may be enough to cover less. You could be looking at a tax increment area with debt obligation of the county on incremental growth revenues, of 10 million, 12 million, something million. It's being analyzed right now.
But you can't use more than 15% of that number to cover the bond.
Yes, or something very close to those words. So now they're going back and looking. There are all other ways to skin the cat also. There are that either don't put the county at as much risk, if you will, and there's risk in everything. Mm-hmm. There are ways to create the equivalent of what I call a redevelopment district, which is called a special assessment district, where you can tax that area. It's not just arbitrary. It's got to be done through a public process. So right now, the proponents and our legal counsel and our consultant, Marty Johnson, are going through this and saying, okay, we got to back up.
In the second iteration of the bond structure, is the county still going to be in first position? Because it seems to me that if the state were in first position, it takes the pressure off the county to have to meet these particular limitations.
I'll answer it to the best I can. I think you're saying, to the extent that there are insufficient revenues, that could be covered, that's in the legislation, that's in the special bill.
Well, no, have the state take the bond.
Right, because it's in the legislation, those words are in there.
Right.
It's definitely being highly debated right now what legislative intent was, what that really means. I mean, they're using a phrase that honestly no one else, including the Department of Taxation, even uses. So we're trying to find that out, and there are multiple schools of thought. So that question really isn't answered yet.
Okay.
But to change the role and say the state's responsible would require new legislation.
So that's not part of SB1?
No, SB1 specific. Well, let me refresh myself here.
Because it sounds
SB1
like SB1
specifically references
allows the state to do whatever it wants, essentially. Doesn't it? From an abatement standpoint?
I'm not a scholar on that, but I would tell you, SB1, I believe, specifically has a provision in there that if there are insufficient revenues to pay incremental growth, and again, whether this applies to the special assessment district or not, I can't tell you because I haven't seen.
Okay, I don't put you on the spot. I was just wanting to understand.
They're great questions, but in essence, to get the county out of first position, at least for the tax increment area, mm-hmm. would take new legislation because the legislation specifically spells out the uncommitted balances of the general fund or whatever it's used.
Okay.
Another thing, if I may add, as I said in our meeting, it's premature to explore what vehicle they may use
mm-hmm.
because they're looking at a number of options. And so we all be patient we'll hear what might work for us, but it's not on the table yet.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would presume, and I'm kind of looking at Lance and Chris, who are active from that area, but I would presume expect like maybe a combination of solutions. You know, you may see a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I mean, the good news is I think this is going to probably make it potentially less burdensome on the county should the county choose to do it, keeping in mind we've never said we're going to do it. We said we're going to apply. The bad news is all the projections were made at about a current market interest rate, you know, and every month that that's delayed, you know, that is subject to volatility. So, you know, but, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, and it's still being worked on. I like the phrase that I heard from Mr. Sater, which is on life support. So, but it'll probably come out missing a few appendages at this stage.
All right, and then a quick second question. You know, the continued talk and discussion around getting, you know, tax rebate or, you know, property tax reduction or whatever because of the success of TRI and the revenue that it generates, you know, that talk is continuing. I'm also hearing that, recall earlier this year when there was a proposal made or a bill introduced to essentially assess Story County fees by our surrounding counties to help them defray the expenses of their infrastructure as a result of the TRI employees. That was one guy putting it forward that got knocked down. It's my understanding that there is now a movement afoot that is a regional approach, a regional commission that will take into account all revenues, all expenses in northern Nevada associated with economic growth, not just TRI, but all of it, that would then essentially take all that, put it in a blender, and reapportion it back out. And the way it sounds to me is it's just another guaranteed share, or guaranteed share in another form. Are you hearing about that? What's that story?
Sure. We constantly hear about it. This crops up in every economic cycle that we go through. Mm. You know, when the cycle is at the bottom and unemployment is high, people love us and love TRI and, you know, would kiss our rings if, you know, they were so inclined. But then when the cycle hits high, unemployment's low, schools start to grow in some respects, they have very short memories in two respects. One is they want to stick their money in our pocket for all the money we're getting, or they want to stick their hands in our pockets for all the money they're getting from TRI, and specifically from Tesla, which, oh, by the way, we're not really getting anything. So they want to do that. And then at the same time, they seem to forget the value of the paychecks that are going into their communities and are being spent in their retail establishments paying for property taxes. It cycles up every time we go through this. Is there a concerted effort right now? We're listening. We're watching. We're trying to play nice with, you know, the powers that be when you go to things like NACO. I know Commissioner Gilman mentioned, I'm sure either Bob Lucey or somebody was at the Washington, D.C. White House convention for NACO. But, you know, that would be, at least in my experience, not as an attorney, that would be a massive undertaking. It may require constitutional amendments because there are jurisdictional boundaries of local government. I mean, if you go back to why Story County and TRI wanted to have Story County acquire the 600 acres, it wasn't greedy. It wasn't anything other than they had a GID, and that GID could not service across county jurisdictions. It had to service in county. That was really the principal argument of that whole effort. So I think my answer is yes, we're aware. We're certainly interested. There's all kinds of flack out there right now. And I guess I'll put it on the record, and I represent only myself. This is not necessarily the county's position, but it is mine. You know, people want to complain about the Washoe County School District, you know, and the burden that we are putting on them. That's baloney. And the reason why it's baloney is they're mismanaged. They have a board that can't hold a legal open meeting, you know, at least according to the media, you know, and they just don't do things right. So, you know, is it a challenge to fund our schools? It always is. But, by God, there's a lot of money coming in from their commerce tax. I don't remember the projections that, you know, Even the Republicans bit the bullet last session before last. And so it's, you know, it's regional, but it's also turf, if you will. And, you know, that's the ugly part of this. Could it happen? Yeah, but I think it's a long way out. And as I said, I will definitely have both feet out the door by the time it happens, but I'll come back and help pay for one of the best attorneys to litigate this thing in court, if that's what it takes.
Well, just keep us informed, because when the bill first got introduced, I can't remember who it was.
Skip Daly.
Yeah. But you know, you guys said, hey, this is happening. We don't think anything's going to come of it. And I'm just asking for an update, and if there's any more than just ether rumor, then perhaps just a board comment.
Even his own committee didn't like the
bill. Yeah, I'm talking about from this point forward. Yeah.
They'll always be. When growth happens.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Lance, I'm sorry, I totally cut in on you.
That's quite right. I think a follow-up comment is we've had incredible success, and we're on the threshold of incredible financial success. And all parties surrounding us would really like to have a piece of that action if they could figure out how to take it. And I think that'll be an ongoing issue for years to come.
All right. Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. County Manager, Mr. Deputy District Attorney, my name is Chris Thompson. I'm the Project Manager for Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. A couple comments on the pipeline, just to make sure that if there's reporting that goes out of this room here today after the hearing, that we're completely accurate. The bond has not been heard by the board with jurisdiction yet. So all the discussions going on are all pre-hearing discussions. So there's no failure, there's no success. This is negotiation. This is typical in floating public bonds. The people applying for the bonds, those interested in the bonds, have to satisfy the people that will be paying it back, which in this case would be some of the businesses or all the TRI, depending on how it's worked out. You have to satisfy the local government authority, in this case Story County. You have to satisfy bond counsel for all parties. You have to satisfy the state finance board, Department of Taxation, and the bond counsel, the people that have floated on Wall Street, and the investment advisors. So there is a long string of people that have to be satisfied here. The application was framed within the four corners of the original law, the Faraday Law, and framed exactly in accordance with that. Council felt, as exactly as the county manager said, they wanted to take a more conservative approach. They brought in concepts from other laws and other types of bonds that they felt should apply here. This was it's being worked on now. There are a number of possible ways to go forward on this, and so it's still doable. But you know, it's got to be. This is a negotiation. And there's a lot of parties involved, but again, this is typical. So I think it'd be too early to say, yes, it's going to work. No, it's not going to work, because there's a lot of people that have to agree. We're hopeful, and I think for Story County, this water would be a boon. Secondly, on the success of TRI, recently we checked with the county comptroller's office. And prior to TRI, the actual general fund budget in the last year before TRI started operations was $3.8 million and change. That was the actual revenue that came into Story County that year. The actual budget for that year was $4.5 million, and there was about a $600,000 shortfall. In the last full budget year reported, which I believe is 2015-2016, I believe, the actual revenue inbound was over $14 million, about $14.5 million, I believe. So TRI, and thanks to the shrewd management and the support by a series of county commissioners and county management support of TRI, has almost quadrupled the county budget going forward. And we're just seeing the beginning of it. So there is no doubt there's financial success there. There's no doubt that people coming in trying to trying to get a piece of that is going to be a threat in the future. One of the politicians that appeared at the Laxalt event yesterday made this following comment. He goes, and this is a serving person from the assembly, and we were, and this came up with him, and he said, so, and he was talking about the folks that, that might be bringing this forward. He said, you mean to tell me that Story County, after all these years, they work so hard and they put so much sacrifice into this thing, after they've had so many years of trying and trying, now they're finally getting there to the edge of success, and someone else is going to come in and steal the money? And he was shaking his head. So I agree with the county manager's assessment. The chance of anything like that passing the legislature, I think the rural counties would grab pitches and or pitchforks and torches and run run some of the bigger counties out of there. Just one man's opinion. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chris. More public comment?
Sam Toll from Gold Hill. I'll make it brief. I was not going to talk about the pipeline, but since it was just brought up, I'd once again like to reiterate my experience that I've shared with you previously with San Francisco Giants. Again, as I've suggested, the city of San Francisco couldn't agree that oxygen is a good thing to have in the air, and three times a public financing stadium package was rejected by the public. Peter McGowan went to me and other San Francisco Giants stakeholders and asked for our money. They asked for our buy-in. I personally, when you guys, if you guys ever go to AT&T Park, you will step over a brick that I paid $5,000 for. If you go to the McCovey Cove, the statue of Willie swinging over the bay there, you will see a brick that I paid $8,000 for. I put down $10,000 per seat for the two seats I bought in the AAA level. That is because I recognized the value of the investment that I made as a client. And I would suggest that rather than burdening taxpayers at any level, first, second, third, 19th position, that the people who will benefit and need to be financially viable and successful, the water that will flow through the pipeline, are the ones who should be borrowing or simply, you know, picking up the cash they drop on their way to the bank to finance the $35 million pipeline. So that's what I have to say on that. So secondly, it's my understanding that workshops that I've seen conducted here in county commission meetings are basically done so within the context of the meeting itself. And my sort of vision of a workshop is where people sit down and hash out over a round table the ideas that the workshop is trying to hammer out. One of the problems that, that the general public has about the timing of this meeting is that most folks work. And so when you talk about a workshop that's going to have an effect on an area of county governance or something that might affect the public, it might be a good idea to, and I'm suggesting the idea of perhaps having an actual workshop where we, you know, sit down over a table. We do it at a time, you know, after work hours, maybe from 6 to 8, like the Planning Commission meetings are held, so that we can get more engagement from the community and perhaps have more voices be heard. You know, typically, you know, you got a few people here at the meeting who enjoy public comment at the end, and there's very little opportunity for other voices to be heard. So that's item number three. And then the other thing I wanted to ask was, it's my understanding that the fire marshal duties with respect to fire inspection and other business license functions have been transferred from the fire district to community development. And I have heard from my sources that that reflects a shift of budget upwards of $900,000 out of the fire protection district and into the community development or into the general fund. And my question is basically, is that accurate? Is that a fair assessment of what's happened? And if so, what's happened with the fire department budget?
Not much. It will, but it won't be anywhere near those numbers. And I don't think we really have calculated final numbers yet. I guess to be a little more accurate to your statement, transferred out probably is not an accurate statement. Contracted out is. contracted through interlocal agreement between the county and the fire district. So that contract provided the responsibilities to the Community Development Department, and the plan, as it is falling in place. In fact, we just had an email on the organizational chart this morning. The plan will be to have those functions done by the Community Development Department. That said, the General has provided funding support from the General Fund to the Fire District for a few years now to help out with some of these work. For instance, plan review and permit fees and business licenses. Portions of those we have general ledgered over to the Fire District to really cover for those services that are now going to be done through a general fund account that has community development in there. The amount of those funds will either diminish or end, depending, but it should not be anywhere near $900,000, and it won't be any of the money that is currently being assessed through the fire district's tax rates. It would only be general fund money staying in the general fund account as opposed to money that would be taken away from the district.
So the fire department isn't, and their budget and the public safety as analogous, isn't being affected directly at all. These are general ledger.
Yeah, they have
general
less funds. Employees and so less revenue, right. Hopefully to a matching amount.
Gotcha.
We've got to balance that, Sam, with the, okay, we were giving you $300,000
right.
And it costs $150,000.
Right.
Okay, we might look at the fairness of that.
Right.
Because that's, the comptroller's got a great program where we try to make the individual funds be self-sustaining. But, you know, we don't, also at the same time, we won't risk services. If anything,
sure.
We're adding additional negotiations with the gentleman I introduced you to yesterday
right.
That says we may want to carry on subsidies for another 2, 3, 4 years out there or something. So we're working through it, but we will not jeopardize operations.
Good. And then just to clarify, the employees that were transferred from the fire district to community development are still, in fact, county employees and not private employees.
As a matter of fact, more to the point, and there's some debates going on with council here, as to whether the employees when they were in the fire district were really county employees or fire district employees,
right.
Keeping in mind that the county executes the collective bargaining agreement. So we can go days, but go with him, don't talk to me. But they are now true county employees. Yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Any other public comment? Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.